On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with our friend John Stoll about his journey of loss and forgiveness.
Joel, welcome back.
Hey, hello. It's good to be here, Andy. How are you doing?
Good. It feels like it's becoming fall way too quick.
Yeah, it felt fall-like today. We played some fall ball today.
Well, we were at the football game on Friday.
And nice.
It was getting a little chilly towards the end.
There was a little bit of a sweatshirt, a need for a sweatshirt, perhaps. And that's saying something. We're still in August. You know, the moment we say this, though,
it's going to get hot.
We're going to get a heat wave. You know, it's what's going to happen. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride.
Joel, we have our backstage open tonight.
We do.
So dudesanddads.com/backstage will get you into our Zoom meeting if you want to hang out.
If you want to be in the backstage, back of stage, back room backstage.
It's nice back there.
It's nice. Climate controlled, I hear.
Not too cold, not too warm. The lights aren't on back there.
That's right. The lights are not on, but it's a digital wonderland back there. Hey, everybody. So we're just glad to have each and every one of you here. As always, we just want to say thank you for all of you that continue to support us. Andy and I were just, every once in a while, we just check in with ourselves and we realize like how long this show has been trucking along. We're often out and about. I know this happens to Andy. We're often out and about and we just get someone coming up to us. Like the local podcast celebrities we are and just says,
hey,
just a thank you for the show. We get, man, a lot of positive feedback. Just thank you for the show, man. Love the last episode. That was, man, all that sort of stuff. We love it. It keeps us going and it gives us a good excuse when our wives ask, what are you doing with your time, to say we're out here making an impact. That's what we're doing.
Right.
The Dudes and Dads podcast. We're connecting with the people and we love it. So, thanks so much for all the encouragement that we get. That's one way to support us. But Andy, there are other supporters we have as well.
There are. So we have personal survivors. Well, personal supporters.
They might be survivors. Yeah.
That can be. You can find more information at dudesanddads.com/support.
Yes.
But Everence also supports this episode. So Dudes and Dads is supported by Everence, dedicated to providing financial solutions through asset management, charitable giving, and banking and other services. More at Everence.com/Michiana. Everence offers financial products subject to regulatory requirements. Visit Everence.com/ for more details. Whoa.
There we go.
I get it eventually.
Thanks, Everence. As always, we want to say thank you to Everence both for their support and for giving Andy and I jobs.
True.
So all good there. Andy, is there anything else we have to talk about?
No.
Good.
Let's get into the content.
We're going to get in the conversation. We do want to welcome my good friend, a brother from another mother, John Stoll. John, thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, you know what? Thank you. It's an honor for us to have you. Andy, John and I, we share a unique and common bond. We are.
Yes.
We're band dads.
Which, yes. And aren't you both band dads for two different bands?
Also,
two different schools.
Well, two different schools. I have not, because Josiah has stuck with football only and has not gone back to band, I have managed to, shall we say, dodge the bullet that John has not previously dodged.
Right. Okay. So I shouldn't say you're not a band dad for the Fairfield, but yes, you are.
We have kids in two separate school systems. The same ones.
And Friday night, those two schools played each other.
They did.
And so yes, that
they
was.
Did. They did. And it was. Let's just say, John, I don't know if you noticed the internet is abuzz with the outcome of that game. Lots of words of protest
and love
and it was just a really, and for us, Goshen and Fairfield, only 6 miles down the road from each other. It's a local, you could say a local rivalry.
That's accurate.
Yeah.
Local rivalry is a,
yeah,
that's a good way to describe it.
But John and I have managed because we share this dual school relationship, we there is no hatchet that needs to be buried between the two of us. We are trying to fully embrace our
dualness,
dual school involvement. But John is John's just a good friend, somebody that I'm glad pretty soon here, John and I are going to be spending almost every weekend together.
Yes.
Loading and unloading things out of trucks and traveling all over the northern the northern hemisphere of Indiana.
For sure.
For sure. And it's going to be great. I'm saying that right now. It's going to be great. But as John and I connected, you know, when band started, John and really his family have, I think, just a really powerful story to tell. And John's had an increased opportunity to tell that story. So we're looking forward to hearing that. But the one thing we always like to start with is the dad stats. We want to know about you, about your family. You're a married man. You've been married for a period of time, clearly, by the number of kiddos that are in the picture now and grandchildren. So just tell us everything that you want to tell us about your family, my friend.
I've been married to the lovely Takesha Stoll for 25 years.
Yes.
We'll be 26 this coming December.
Wonderful.
We have five children. Oldest, Jeffrey, is 26. Zane would have been 25 right now.
Okay.
Sophia is 14. Dejan is 14. Sophia is very proud that she's 13 days older than Dejan. And Amari is 11. Yes. 11. Sorry.
Yep. Say it with confidence. That's what matters. And listen,
we're as parents of multiple kids, whenever I am asked at the doctor's office for the birth dates.
Oh, that's terrible.
There's a stage fright that comes over me as you're going down through the list. And then you're
I'm always like,
so we get it. I totally get it. Yeah. Yeah.
So Amari's 11.
Yep.
And we have, three grandchildren. Oldest is Alina and she's 4. Next would be Asher. He passed away. And then Anala is 10 months.
Wow.
Tomorrow.
No. And adorable. Adorable.
Yes.
You are, John frequently is, when he comes, so he comes to our band booster meetings, these band parents that we get together and Anala comes with every once in a while. And I will say, every person in the room when the baby comes in is immediately distracted from the agenda item at hand. It's like, it's very difficult. It's like very difficult to stay focused. A lot of cuteness in one place. So, okay. So John, I think the, you know, with the family you have, and you've kind of initiated this conversation. Talk to me about how you guys built this family of yours, because like, I think for the listener who's, you had two kids that are only 13 days apart, how did that happen? And like how are the timetables and all that? So you guys have taken a certain route to building the family that you have and all the kiddos that you have. Tell us about it. How'd you do it? What happened?
Actually, before we were even married, we had numerous conversations about adoption and wanting to adopt. My wife's adopted. My parents have adopted three children over the years. They've fostered for 25 years. So that was something we always wanted to do. We got the option. We got the chance to do that much earlier than we thought, just a couple years after we were married. And we adopted Jeffrey and Zane. They were 2 and 3 when we met them for the first time, 3 and 4 when they finally got to come home. They are from Belize in Central America. We had a connection there through the missionaries from our church at the time, Tri-Lakes Community Church. Noah and Loretta Hosteller spent, I don't know, a lot of years there, but they were our connection. And we adopted, had the option and opportunity to adopt Zane and Jeffrey. So kind of a little funny story when the opportunity for those kids, they were discussing that on a Sunday morning one time that, hey, we need someone to take care of these kids for a few months.
Sure.
It was. Right. And my wife and I were going home from church that day, and she's like, hey, you know those kids that Doreen talked about? And I was like, yeah. She goes, I told her we'd take the younger two. I was like, you did what?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it was great. And that we didn't know that there was an opportunity to adopt them at the time, but that came in. So we're really happy that worked out.
Wow. Yeah.
So then we went quite a few years actually, and weren't able. We knew that having biological kids would be difficult for us, but we were able to have Dejan through in vitro. And at the time, there was two embryos that like made it.
Yeah.
And then one of them didn't for fairly early on. So we were kind of like, we're going to have twins maybe, you know, and then that didn't work out. Well, then 6 months after Dejan was born, we got a phone call, said, hey, would you take this little girl, Sophia, while her mom goes to rehab? And we said, sure, we would. So Sophia came and she was 6 months old at the time, 13 days older than our son, Dejan. And well, she never left.
Yeah.
And several years went by kind of in limbo about the permanency plan. But in the end, we were able to adopt her also. And so she's been with us since 6 months old. And then one day my wife said, hey, I don't feel good. And I was like, what? And
those are the words. I was don't feel good. How?
And, you know, it wasn't supposed to be able to happen, but God. And then we had Amari. So that finished out our five.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, a little different route than some. And
sure.
Some people look at me and if you would take a picture of our family, my wife's African-American. She's from the south side of Chicago. Got transplanted over here like in, you know, junior high.
Uh-huh.
And Zane and Jeffrey are they're African-American as well. And Sophia is from South Bend. She's white. Dejan is biracial. Amari is biracial. And I mean, the looks you get.
100%. Are, yeah. Who's yeah, how did, yeah, how yeah. did this, how did this happen?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I love how the connections happen though. It seems like a lot of times we've had a lot of people on guests on this show who have had adoption stories. And so yeah. I love hearing that. I love seeing how God has blessed people and brought families together. So yeah, thanks for,
yeah.
for sharing yours story tonight.
That's awesome. I think so many of us, I'm sure when, as you were younger, when you were thinking about, if you were thinking about like, hey, as I get older and how, you know, I want to be, maybe you wanted to be a dad at some point, you know, that was on the radar. Few people ever really, you know, think about like, oh, the 20-year-old John Stoll was not thinking about this. Definitely not thinking about this route that you guys have taken. And, and I'm sure, would you say your wife had kind of, I always wonder if people have had a long-term vision on the adoption side, like if they've had a long-term vision for that, if that was something that was planted, in her heart early or, you know, earlier in life, or that kind of like just developed at, like, as you guys were getting closer to like, once you were married, like how that worked for her.
She had a really rough childhood. So I think her idea of what might be wasn't anything like it turned out to be,
yeah.
which was probably, you know, I would think if you asked her, it was probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But she loves kids.
Yeah.
And she can't really say no to a child,
yeah.
which is a pretty good thing, you know,
yeah.
to be able to have a heart big enough to,
yeah.
you know, and open enough to do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right away there was like, well, we're not saying no to any children that come our way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the arms have been open ongoing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she's been, well, take a step back to the band thing.
Yeah.
My wife's been the color guard director at Goshen High School for 21 years.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
And, she's, I mean, not only, I mean, she's coached, you know, I don't know, hundreds of kids,
yep.
but, she really loves the relationships that she's able to build and the impact that she's had on them. And I mean, some of those students to this day, long-term relationships
yep.
with our family.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
that is like my wife in general. That's how she operates. She likes deep,
yep.
impactful, meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to have that and adopt some children and have some children and, at the same time be able to coach kids.
Yeah. She's found every which angle to impact the life of a young person. Working all the angles. Love it.
And she's a teacher.
Yeah. So what does she teach?
Actually right now she teaches PE. She's halftime PE teacher at West Goshen Elementary.
If I were to ask your wife if she's ever wanted to throw a dodgeball at a kid, what do you think? Like, what are the chances? Yes. Yeah. 100%. I just always wonder if specifically the PE teachers, if they ever have like a small fantasy about letting one loose and, no judgment, zero judgment on that. I just wonder.
Some of the stories are pretty entertaining. I will say.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think if you had asked her a long time ago, if she'd ever teach PE, she just said no.
Sure.
But she was a grade school teacher. And then she was off for a while. And then she taught middle school dance and ended up at West Goshen as PE. It fits our schedule nice. Works out real well.
Fantastic. So in the midst of you guys forming this family and the interesting twists and turns of that, a few years ago, really your first, or maybe not first encounter, but one of the first encounters with the loss of your grandson, Asher. Obviously, and I think the way it, from what I guess you guys have, you've said very sudden, like a very sudden loss.
Yes.
Tell us about it. Tell us how you guys as a family navigated that. Because in our conversations about, you know, infant and child loss, it is a special kind of, all hurt is hurt.
Yeah.
But it is a unique experience, I think, specifically to see, like, there's so much hope for a future for a child, right? Everything that's in front of them and for that to come to an end. What did that experience look like for you guys?
Asher was the son of my son Zane, and Asher passed away when he was 3 months old from sudden infant death syndrome. And we had not maybe spent as much time as we had hoped to with him in those first 3 months, but we did as much as we could, right? But it was obviously sudden, unexpected. It was just traumatic, right? Watching my son go through that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. No, that was his son.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And years down the road, I have an idea of what that felt like.
Yeah. For him. Yeah. Yeah.
But my family is pretty close. We're like a pretty close family and support each other a lot. And it really kind of drew my family together as long as a lot of our friends and, kind of like when someone experiences a sudden loss, a lot of people rally around them.
Yep.
So for us, it was, just navigating how to support Zane as best we could, which I didn't really know what to do. Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then just take care of all those things you have to take care of that we just wanted to be helpful with.
Yep.
And, Asher's maternal grandparents were, right there. They lived in Fort Wayne, and maternal grandparents lived in Fort Wayne as well. So they were able to be there day in and day out and right there with him. So we're really thankful for them.
Yeah.
To be able to help walk through that, like kind of walk through a little more closer with Zane and Bree than we were at the time. But any loss is bad.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Any sudden loss is harder.
Yeah.
And the sudden loss of a small child.
Yeah.
It just makes you wonder why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't have answers for that, right? I'm like, I don't know, Lord.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand your ways here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you hope, I don't know, this is also a good question for Andy. I don't know if I've ever asked it this way, but like, do you hope for an answer some, like, someday? Like, do you have that sense of, like, that will be resolved someday between you and God, or do you just sort of, like, release that?
For me, I'd be curious to know what Andy has to say about that. I've released that here on earth. Like, yeah. I don't know that there is a resolve that can come to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe when we get to heaven, I can ask him and he'll say, oh, well, this, and I'll be like, oh, okay. But maybe
it seems hard to imagine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Maybe when we get to heaven, it won't matter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I kind of think, but
yeah, I think for me, the same thing, like there's a while that after my daughter passed away that I was angry at God.
Yeah.
For that. It was like, why, what, you know, I was just angry. Once I released that. And I don't know that I want to know, like, why, like, what the purpose was. Cause I've seen a lot of stuff, a lot of good happen out of that. A lot of ministry that we were able to do.
Right.
Because of her death.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I'd want to be like, know why.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think in a world where it seems like we have answers for everything around every corner, and we have very, like, easy instant access. Mm-hmm. I think it is a unique perspective. And I think, and it kind of fascinating, kind of interesting, kind of amazing that I think God does a work in people to sort of, like, release the need. It's not letting anybody off the hook to say, like, oh, you know, right. Just these terrible things can happen and we don't ever have to think about why, you know, why or whatever. Cause it's a natural, it's a very natural, I think natural response, but no, I think that's really amazing just to hear you guys say, like, hey, we're gonna release that. And part of the release is part of the healing. Yeah, I think maybe part of the healing process to an extent. What does healing look like for you and your family? Like, and was it different for you than it was for Keisha or
in regards to Asher?
Yeah, in regards to Asher.
Well, I don't know. What does healing look like?
Yeah.
It looks like surrender. For me, it looks like surrender to Jesus.
Mm.
Because there is no earthly thing. There's nothing on this earth. There's nothing I can Google that is going to bring any peace to me other than I can put my hope and trust in the Lord.
Yeah.
I don't know what my wife would say. That time was really rough on her.
Yeah.
Really, really rough on her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just not quite sure. I'm not quite sure what she would say, but I mean, other than I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's, and everyone processes healing and grief differently. So
yeah.
So you guys, the loss of Asher, that was in 2022.
Yes, I believe 2022.
And only a few years pass before you are yet faced again with a just massive tragic loss in your family. Tell us about that season for you guys, because this is sort of still an ongoing story. There's still the results from this, but tell us more about that.
On September 2nd, 2024, our son Zane was murdered. He was shot and killed in Fort Wayne. It was a Labor Day evening. And we didn't find out till the next morning. Things you never think you'd have to deal with.
Right.
This is one of them.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of things you think you never have to deal with, but this one was one. And, my son Zane was far from perfect. we've had a lot of, had a lot of struggles, right? He and I, we went through a really rough time raising him. At times, a fractured relationship with him. But through some of that difficultiness, we were able to, repair our relationship, establish that relationship. There was forgiveness between he and I, both ways. And we had become, we had developed a pretty close relationship. Now, he had lived in Fort Wayne for a few years. We didn't see each other, you know, super often.
Yeah.
But we talked fairly often, to each other, and had a lot of conversations with him about where he was and what his goals were. And, I knew he was struggling, and as being his dad, like the father of an adult child, there's only so much you can say or tell you.
Yeah.
You know, you're 24, you know, it doesn't really work for me to tell him what to do. Sure. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He kind of has to learn, but he was working hard to, better his situation, to get better, to kind of get out of where he was. I kind of know where his heart was. I felt like he was really trying to become the dad that he needed to be and get himself stable. And he was working on it. Unfortunately, he just ran out of time.
Yeah.
So obviously when you get the news that somebody killed your son, there's a whole nother aspect of you're not only dealing with the grief, the trauma of that news, but in the days to come, you deal with detectives and prosecutors trying to figure out what happened, trying to hold the people accountable that did that. And in Zane's situation, there was two men that were charged. They arrested within a couple days, that they both charged with murder. And I don't, you know, I haven't dealt with a loss that close to me. It was the first one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I felt like I have no idea what that loss would be, like what it would feel like when you weren't dealing with the whole other side of this, when someone did it deliberately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why would someone take someone's life on purpose? Those are questions there are not answers for.
Yeah.
I remember that week. You know, there's a lot of stuff you have to do when someone passes away. And there's a lot of decisions you have to make about arrangements and stuff that you think, what in the world? Like, how am I here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I obviously it was a very traumatic week. It was very crazy to have conversations with detectives about what's going on. And they were very, very, very kind to us. Kept us in the loop on what was going on. And that process is still going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Zane was, he had a lot of friends. He had a tremendous sense of humor. He developed friends everywhere he was, from when he was a little kid till, you know, until he was an adult. And it was so special to see so many of his friends from, you know, high school friends, still, you know, have a deep respect for him and relationship with him, as well as I met friends that I'd never met before, you know?
Yeah.
Again, the support of my family, my wife's family, our church, at Restore. I mean, just overwhelming support from everyone that we're involved with. And that really helped carry us through that week, you know?
Well, I recall after I learned about, John, I think you and I had talked about Zane, I think maybe a couple of days before we lost him. We were at a football game one night. It's the one thing I'll remember, just hearing how proud of him you were. And, you know, I think for any of us, it's like, you know, none of us are, we don't know what tomorrow holds. Mm-hmm. None of us are granted another day. And, you know, my hope would be that you guys would feel like a gift that you were in that place with your son, you know, leading up to losing him. That's one thing, I mean, an impression on me, I know that you guys had a real sense that things are just, there's a hope for a better direction, hope for a better tomorrow. And then, like you said, I mean, just kind of running out of time, like some other evil dark force coming in and shutting that down. And, you know, I think it's a reminder. I have felt this, like, in your guys' situation specifically, like there's a battle going on. And I'm sure within your own heart, within your family's heart every day, of like, what route will I choose? Cause something like this, I mean, it seems to me it could just really consume. I mean, it could consume you.
For sure. For sure. In some ways it has.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's a battle.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a battle to not let it consume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've, we've exchanged some messages, and I've thought about the whole idea of just like having to be intentional about pushing back darkness, like pushing back dark or pushing back against it.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done to fight? Cause I mean, and I know the inner workings of the human heart day to day. I mean, it could be, you know, you could start the day one way and end up another and vice versa. But what I've just been, and that's why I'm proud to call you my friend. What I've seen you do, I think, at least from my perspective, is to be intentional about that fight. To like that there's going to be a posture that you take, I think, with you and God, with you and the people, the men that did this to your son. What has your approach been? How have you thought about it? In terms of your response to all of this.
Yeah, there's a natural, what I've found is everybody thinks, it seems that everybody just assumes that I want the absolute worst for the people who did this.
Sure.
And I think that's like an earthly response, to that. But I've told people, I don't know that I was ever angry.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ways to describe the sadness that I feel and I experience. And I believe it was the Thursday after Zane died, the detective called me, and I'd got some updates, but he called me and said they arrested one guy and that they expected to have the other one that night. And I think he texted me in the middle of the night. Maybe he called me and said, just want you to know we've arrested the other subject. And I remember being heartbroken.
Mm.
Not only for my son, but for those guys. And I knew right away that for me, I had to forgive them. And that was something that in those few days as we planned Zane's memorial service, this is the following Monday, forgiveness just rolled through my mind constantly. And as we planned Zane's service, I was basically, they asked me, you know, like, do you want to share? I've done some preaching, some messages in my past, and my pastor Doreen, she's like, do you want to share? And I was like, I don't know. And I was like, I'll let you know. And as I processed that I'm coming, it was really clear to me that the Lord wanted me to speak my son's memorial service. And I'd already asked my dad to share. My dad's a pastor. We didn't compare notes, but what I was felt like I had to do, needed to do, and wanted to do was to forgive the men who took my son.
Yeah.
And so I had already made that decision in my heart, right? I made that decision in my heart pretty quickly. You have to make it more than once.
Sure. Yeah. I bet. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's something I have to do still to this day. I have to decide something that I have to forgive, you know. But I was able to, at Zane's memorial service, I was able to share and speak forgiveness and to share a little bit about forgiveness. I wrote a couple notes here.
Yeah.
I didn't put in what I wanted to, but there's a song by Matthew West called Forgiveness. And it's something like, it starts out as something like, it's the last thing on your mind today. It's the opposite of how you feel when the pain they cause is just too real. It always goes to those who don't deserve. And it takes everything you have just to say the word.
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that has been like forgiveness for me, forgiving them has been, I think, the part that has kept me sound.
Mm.
It's been almost a year. In what, a week or so? It'll be a year. And I can honestly say that, like, my faith in Jesus, my relationship with him has kept me going, but he has proven his faithfulness. He has never left me. I know he'll never forsake me. He's been there in every step of my journey. He's been there in everything that we've had to deal with the prosecution side of this story. And I have my hope in him. I get my peace from him. And I can forgive because of him. You know, that day, my son lost his life. And he's never coming back. I'll never see him again on this earth. But the families of those two men, in a lot of ways, they lost their sons also.
Sure, yeah.
My heart breaks for them.
Yeah.
And I grieve for them. The young man who pulled the trigger was 19. And he pled guilty in March. And he is awaiting he will be sentenced after the trial of the other one. That trial was just moved to February. And at I at their sentencing, at his sentencing, I will have the opportunity to, I can't speak directly to him, but I will have the opportunity to address the court.
Yeah.
And it's very important for me. It's very important to me that I speak those words in the court, that I forgive him.
Yeah.
I want him to know that. And I want his family to know that. You see, like, without forgiveness, you can develop hate. And hate will eat you from the inside out. Hate will consume you. And I've had people ask me, how can you forgive? And I will say, how can I not forgive? If I don't, like, I can't imagine what life would be like without being able to extend forgiveness for me. If I was even alive, because I could see how it could drive one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To do bad things.
Yeah.
Like to yourself, I think.
Yeah.
If I was alive, I would be an angry, unpleasant person. And I don't want to be that. And the people around me don't want that. My family doesn't want that. My grandchildren don't want that.
Mm.
They don't need that.
Yeah.
And I forgive. When I was getting ready to leave to come over here, my wife said, it's that verse where it talks about we'll overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And I think that's a lot of this story. I hope that people can learn to forgive. I hope they can see the importance of it. They can experience the peace that I've experienced. Because I think all the earthly things would tell you that you shouldn't feel what I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm part of the kingdom of God. And I forgive as Jesus has forgiven me.
Yeah. It's a miracle,
mm-hmm.
really.
And how cool it would be if those two gentlemen come to know Jesus because of your testimony.
Thought a lot about that. And someday, as strange as it might sound to some people, I hope I can have a relationship with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't need anybody else to be mad at them.
Right.
I mean, who does?
Yeah, right. Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys' lives are changed forever.
Yep.
And yeah, I hope and pray that they can come to know Jesus and they can experience the peace and hope that comes from him. Their life might their life might look different, but it's not over.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, John, I do think about, I think about, yeah, every opportunity, this is the truth for us as human beings. We have daily opportunities to forgive in small ways, you know, to hold things against each other, bring up past hurts. This is a classic marriage move, to say we forgive our spouse, but then when we get in an argument, we bring old things to the forefront. And I just love what you said, like making the decision to forgive again and again and again. It's not necessarily for us. I mean, I think in our weakness, it's like, man, I gotta go back to that again, back to that decision again and kind of renew that, especially between me and God. And, you know, and because ultimately we talked about release, you know, releasing things to God at the beginning of this episode. And really that seems to be what I hear you say. I mean, that's a big part of it, right? Like this is not yours to carry. This is not yours to hold on to. It does belong to God. So I wonder, for you guys as a married couple, like how have you guys walked for you and Takesha, like how have you guys walked together through this? Cause like it's two people trying to walk together and experiencing, and I have learned this from my friends, experiencing the loss in different ways too.
Yeah. Yeah, when I told my wife I was invited to come on this podcast, and she kind of looked at me and she's like, "You ready for that?" And I was like, "I don't know." and she's not like, I don't think she could do this, right?
Yeah.
Because we're both processing it completely different.
Sure.
Which we're completely different people.
Yeah.
So it's totally understandable.
Yeah.
You know, I actually did some research recently, just a little bit. That like it's a common assumed thing that divorce rates of someone who has lost a child is really high.
Mm.
And when I did some research, what I found was actually that's a myth.
Mm.
And now I didn't dig deep. So someone's probably going to like, you're wrong. For my little bit of research I did, it appears that divorce rates of people who have lost a child, I think it was tied to just losing a child, not a murder, but
yeah.
Anyways, it was actually a little bit lower than statistics. Like the average rate was a little higher than this. But anyways, I thought it was kind of interesting, and I think that in a lot of ways it's drawn us closer together in maybe ways that we're not even totally sure of yet.
Sure.
And I think if you would ask her, probably at any point in this last year, she would say, I'm really concerned about John.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say, I know I would.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned about her.
Yeah.
I think watching my wife grieve is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And I think for her the same. It's really hard to watch your spouse go through that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it has sparked a lot of conversations. It has sparked a lot of, my wife's really a lot better than me than this, but like trying to prioritize self-care, like taking care of yourself. And she was like, you have to take care of yourself, because if you don't, like, you're not going to be who the rest of us need you to be if you're not taking care of yourself. And I'm not very good at that. I can do a lot of things and I take care of a lot of people, but I'm not necessarily the best at taking care of myself. And that's something that I'm learning through this.
Yeah.
Is that I have to do what I feel like I need to do. Like, for me, and I asked the Lord, what does that mean?
Yeah,
what does it mean to take care of myself? You know, there's my wife would, especially in the first few months, just sit with a friend.
Yeah,
some of our best friends, Tim and Jenny, live across the road, and my wife would just go over there at 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
And sit with her friend and sit with their dog.
Yep.
And I don't know what they talked about. Maybe they didn't even talk. They just sit.
Yep.
And the importance of some really close friends has been really good, but it's drawn us together in a way that you just end up talking about things that, and through those relationships, you end up becoming a little closer together, right?
Mm. Yeah.
When you're married couples, talk about things that you don't talk about with anybody else. And you're at a point where you trust each other more than anybody else. And when you're faced with something so difficult, And those conversations are much different, but they're just as deep or deeper than it draws you together. There's also an element that sparks a little bit of fear of the future.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen if, how's this going to affect me in 10 years?
Yeah.
Or whatever. And we've had some of those discussions. I've had some fears of what this might mean in 10 years or once our kids are gone or, you know, but, or our younger kids are grown, but we pretty quickly put those fears to rest when we, you know, bring them up, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, in one way or the other, the addressing of what could, I mean, none of us know what could happen in the future. And even, I mean, I'm sure you think about this, like as a dad and as a grandpa, like how is the rest of the family going to process this as they get older, as they, especially with young kids, like as they're, you know, as they're more aware of the ramifications of the loss and they, you know, they sort of see, I mean, gosh, these older people are responding to this way different than I did, or even what they even remember, you know, even what they're aware of. And I mean, I can only imagine how you guys have had, I mean, what a balancing act, even talking about it with, especially with your kiddos who have a wide range of age and experience and maturity levels and all of that. What have you desired for the rest of your, I mean, for your family, what did you desire for them coming through all of this?
Yeah. My oldest son, Jeffrey, he's only 16 months older than Zane. And this has been extremely hard on him for a lot of reasons, but it's been extremely hard on him. And that's been hard to watch. You know, he has a much different relationship between him and Zane than Zane and the other, our youngest three children. But Jeffrey just started working with me a week ago at my job.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm really, really thankful for that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it. I hope that this is part of the journey for him, you know, and me, just to be able to spend some more time together. And you know, we don't talk about it much, but a little bit we have, but just to be with each other, I think is going to help. So I really hope that, you know, he can come to that point of being able to feel the peace of Jesus.
Yeah.
Our younger three kids are, I mean, they're doing very well and they're amazing. They're all three doing real well. Zane left the house when he was 17, maybe. I won't go into all that, but so they were pretty young when he moved out of the house, you know. So their relationship with him is a little bit different than, you know, Jeffrey would have been. But I think they have, I think, especially my son, Dejan, he's very concerned about mom and I.
Yeah.
Like their concern is very much focused on me and mom and how we're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an aspect of this that we haven't, I don't know if you want to get into it, but our grandchildren came to live with us end of January this year, January of 25. And my two granddaughters, Alina and Anala, and that has had a drastic impact on my family of like,
I'm sure. Yeah.
We at the time they were 13, two 13 year olds and a 10 year old. And then we added she turned four just after she moved in and a 3 month old baby. And I thought I retired from changing diapers and
jokes
all
on
of
you.
That, but evidently I didn't.
Yeah,
I just changed some diapers today. So, but you know, that's kind of a unique journey in this for us, in that it's been so special to have Zane's daughter with us. Like, I mean,
yeah,
if you look at her face and you look at his face, like, I mean, they're like carbon copies, you know, when Zane was four, you know. So there's a lot of things that have been really special about it. And it, I think it's been some it's allowed some healing for maybe our little kids, especially. I mean, for my wife and I, too, to be able to, you know, for a period of time, we don't know how long this will be, you know, really hope that their mother can be able to take care of them in the future. And, you know, but for this season of life that we're in, it's a real honor and a real special thing to be able to have them. But it has impacted our family at home drastically. But it's also like somehow, you know, it's like a part of Zane is there.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that with two 14-year-olds, you know, and an 11-year-old. But there's like, hey, this is my brother's child. And I get to take care of her. And they are doing, I mean, they're amazing kids. They're doing so good. They're so helpful. And I told them one time when they, when the babies first came, I said, this is where the rubber meets the road in our family. Like, people can talk about their faith all they want to. But we're in a season of life where we're forced to, in a way, right? We're forced to deal with this terrible grief. And all of a sudden we're going to take these two children in, which of course we're saying yes 100% right away. But this is going to be, this is going to be different for us. This is going to, this is going to impact everything we do. Everything. Like, I mean, there is nothing that's not impacted by it. And I was like, hey, this is where what we say, what we believe lines up with what we do. And it's going to look different than probably all of your friends. And that's okay. But for us, this is where we are. And, you know, I think they've just learned, especially those three younger ones at home, have learned so much about faithfulness and love, forgiveness. They've heard me talk about it. And just walking through grief, you know.
And hopefully they're learning something about joy too.
You know, there's a, my joy comes from the Lord. And while I, at the same time, grieve my son, I get to hold my granddaughter. And there's joy in that. And when I can watch her, the other day I took home, we have a blueprint printer at work, and I had some scrap blueprint paper and these huge sheets of paper. I took them home and I was like, I had to do some stuff on a blueprint at work, or on the table. It's for band. And but I got it, got that paper out, and I got her all her crayons, and she drew on that humongous paper just like Grampy was drawing on his paper. And, you know, that's, you know, there's a lot of joy in that. And, you know, when I, just this week, I was able to take a baby, Anala, and she would put her head down on my shoulder, and three times I put her to sleep like that this week. And I mean, that's a lot of, that's fun stuff. You know, and it's precious. It's precious. So that has been really, really, really good.
That's awesome. Well, John, I will say, as you mentioned, there's more to this journey. There's still a pending, pending trial here months out. And, I think, man, our continued prayer is that, well, cause we know God's going to continue to show up in all of it. And each and every day will be a new day and a new decision to make. But, man, we're in your guys' corner. Like, we're just, we're here with you, and we're just grateful that you, man, you share the story. It's, pretty incredible. And I know there are people out there that are connecting with it in some way or another. And I just, I hope it's an encouragement for sure, but thanks.
You're welcome. I really, my son's not here anymore, but his life is not lost. There's can be power from this story. His life can still affect many people in a positive way. And I hope that I can be a part of that. You know, somehow.
I think it's happening already. Yeah. So
definitely. Yeah. Thank you for being here and being willing to share your story.
Thanks. But of course,
no,
John,
of course.
We can't let him go without.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads pop quiz.
10-4. Okay.
There we go.
So this is where we're going to ask John random questions. You can't prepare for them. They lack. This has been a very serious interview. They usually lack any level of seriousness, just to lighten the mood a little bit.
That's all right.
Just to get to know you a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a different level from the whole interview.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly.
All right.
So, I'll start and then we'll see where it
all
goes.
Right, let's go.
I always get worried because sometimes it's like, I'll say one and then Andy, that was one that he was going to take. We steal each other's every once in a while, but I don't care. Cause I'm asking first, John, if there were a sandwich named after you, what's on the sandwich? What is you go to the menu, you look up, you're like the John Stoll. What in the world are they putting on that thing? That's what I want to know.
Burgers.
Okay.
It's going to have two burgers.
Of course, probably, because you're serious.
Probably three slices of cheese of different kinds.
Okay. Oh,
a Kojak, cheese Kojak, Pepper Jack. Throw something else in there. I'm not sure what it would be.
How do you feel about bacon on that one? You're going to throw that on there?
We're definitely going to have some bacon.
Okay.
I'd prefer thick cut bacon.
Nice. Okay. I really hope you all are getting a real sense of what John brings to the table here. It's
bacon.
Yeah, it's bacon. It's meat. It's all the
bacon thing. And cheese.
Grilled onion.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little spicy mustard.
Ooh. People have,
I think
mustard's a dividing line for some people.
I think he's gone into more detail than most of our other guests that have been asked that
I like
question.
I like it because I feel like this is a question that hit home with him. I think
I like to cook and I like to eat. So
yeah,
there you go.
Bingo, bango. The John Stoll sandwich. Fantastic.
Wow. Over that, charcoal.
I'm
the Stoll, the Stoll burger.
I'm mouth watering over here.
Yeah.
Can't even think of a question now.
Yeah.
If you were on a desert island, just you, what is one item you would want with you?
For fun or to survive?
This is your game.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
Or both. I mean, whatever one.
Probably a knife.
Yeah. You usually have a knife on you, I find, most of the time.
Yes.
Any good bandana.
A good bandana. Yeah. And for your job, I'm assuming that a knife always has to be within close reach. So
correct. I think I would have a knife.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. John, let's see here. If you were to have any superpower available to you, what's the one you want?
That's a tough one. Not getting tired.
I feel like that really speaks to his current stage of life. Just infinite energy.
Like you just superpower. You never get tired.
Yeah.
You never feel tired.
Okay.
I like to sleep though, but I don't want someone to be tired.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's good.
All right. If you had a personal assistant just following you around every day, that would probably get annoying. But if you did, what would you have them do?
Oh my.
Have them carry your blueprints around. Some tasks that you would have them
carry
like
the knife.
Well, yeah. I think if you ask some guys at work, they might feel like they're my personal assistant. So I have to be careful about what I say here. They'd probably just be carrying a lot of things.
Yes.
One way or the other, whether it's at home and you're carrying a child in a car seat or you're at work and you're carrying, you know, whatever.
You always have something to carry. It seems always.
Always.
There's always something.
There's always something going on.
That makes sense. John, what's one country that you have not yet visited that you would like to visit?
Australia.
Ooh, Australia. Good day. They do a lot of grilling over there too.
On the Bobby.
So that's right up his alley. That's good.
I just murdered that accent.
Bobby. The Bobby. Are we from Boston? Are we from Australia? We don't know.
I don't know. I parked my car.
No. Yeah. And Harvard Yard. Yeah. Yeah. You get to ask the last question.
Last question. Ooh, okay. One band that you either have seen or want to see in concert live.
One band that I have seen or I want to
see. Yeah, like, right. Like, so this is your favorite
band that you'd want either has seen in concert or want to see.
Third Day.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Gosh, that takes me back. I think my first Christian concert ever, Indiana State Fair, was a Third Day concert.
My wife's been on a big Third Day kick lately, so we've been going through the Third Day.
Really. Okay, wow. That takes me back, strangely. Mm-hmm. Well, John, congratulations. You've successfully passed the Dudes and Dads pop quiz. Man, flying colors, fantastic. But brother, thank you for being here. Thanks for sharing your story, hanging out with us. Friends, as always, you can head over to dudesanddads.com and check out show notes, past episodes.
Help support the show.
Help support the show at dudesanddads.com/support. Thank you. We'll take your $5. We'll take your $10. We'll take your $100. Any of it. Love it.
Keep the show going.
But you help keep it going. Keep the wheels on this thing. Also, dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com. If you got feedback you want to give us, get in contact.
Pithy remarks.
Pithy?
Yes.
Love a good pithy remark. Got to say that, right?
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. And my favorite, the voicemail. 574-501-4467.
Leave us a message. Send us an email. Check out the website. Get some merch even if you want. That's good too. But hey, guys, as always, we thank you for hanging out with us. And until next time, we wish you grace.
And peace.